Chapter 11. When he came to, Nico wondered if he'd passed out from exhaustion. He was back at the bottom of the stone stairwell, his cheek pressed against the rough, rocky floor of the cavern. His body was sore all over, so he stayed still for a moment, trying to get his bearings. He'd fallen asleep, hadn't he? The endless repetition of walking down the steps behind the door of Orpheus must have drained him of his energy. This was unlike him, though. Nico generally had trouble falling asleep, unless he had shadow traveled a long distance. The memory of the gigantic Athena Parthenos statue flashed in his mind, and he shuddered. That summer had involved a lot of sudden, long-lasting naps in order to manage transporting the Parthenos via shadow travel halfway around the world. But this was different. His mind was even more tired than his body, which didn't make any sense. He couldn't seem to string his thoughts together. He had a vague feeling that something was wrong, but he couldn't identify what or why. He blinked a couple of times, his eyes adjusting to the dim light of the underworld. And that's when he saw the shadow. A dark mass flickered in the near distance, swaying back and forth. Nico's heart began to thump so loudly, he worried that this thing would hear it. Appendages of some sort swirled and twisted about its body. It moved unnaturally, quavering and jerky. And Nico remained as still as he could. Maybe it thought he was dead. He certainly wasn't going to give it another idea. But where was... He shifted his head just a bit, his breath even and slow, and his gaze fell upon... Well... Nico's pulse quickened. He would have recognized that bushy blonde hair anywhere. Will was splayed on the ground about 20 feet away, completely still aside from the gentle rise and fall of his back as he breathed. And that shadowy thing was looming above him, its appendages almost like tentacles swaying over Will's body as if casting some kind of spell. "Sleep, demigod," it said in a slimy, slippery voice. Nico acted without thinking. He pushed himself up with one hand, and with the other, he drew his sword. "Get away from him," said Nico. His dark blade glowed fiercely as he held it toward the monster, pointing the tip toward... Well, this creature only had the vaguest shape of a body, so Nico just guessed where its head might be. For all Nico knew, he was targeting one of the being's armpits. Nico probably didn't look all that threatening anyway. The creature shifted toward him, pulling in all its appendages. As it did so, the darkness encasing it drifted away like birthday candle smoke, leaving something behind. A vaguely humanoid shape with arms, legs, a chest, a head, which was in the place Nico had guessed, and a face. Beneath a black spiked helmet of Stygian iron was a visage as shiny and slick as tree sap. Other details fell into place. Half a dozen milky white eyes, a chiseled V-shaped jaw, and a triangular bone-like protrusion that might have been a beak or a nose. Their emaciated body was wrapped in inky, form-fitting cloth, and their appendages folded elegantly behind them, so it looked like they were wearing a cape. Nico didn't want to tell the creature that they were super cool, but they were super cool. "Nico D'Angelo," they said, and their words seemed to slither under his skin. "Finally, you might put up the kind of struggle I was expecting." "I'll do more than that." Nico jabbed his blade toward the creature, though it was hard to look intimidating when he was propped up on one arm and his legs felt like wet sandbags. "What have you done to Will?" The creature smiled. At least Nico assumed that's what the jagged line of pointy black teeth indicated.
"I only pushed him toward what he wanted. His mind did the rest."
"What he wanted?" Nico's stomach twisted. "If you hurt him, I swear." Who even are you? The creature's smile shriveled and died.
Who am I?
Well, yeah, I don't recognize you. Do you work for my father?
As if.
The creature roared.
Ew, why would I ever do that?
I don't know, you're down here. You aren't in Tartarus, and I've never seen you or your kind before. You haven't exactly given me a lot to go on.
Honestly, I'm offended, they said. I know who you are. Do you not do your own research into demons?
What? Research? The demon dropped and sat cross-legged in front of Nico.
It's ludicrous, they said. Just ludicrous. Here we are, roaming the underworld, sending our choicest monsters and spirits back to the upper world to give you demigods something to do, and you can't even muster up the slightest bit of interest in who we are.
Nico blinked. I'm so lost, he said. Should I recognize you?
I would hope so.
The demon threw their hands up in despair.
I visit you all the time.
No, you don't.
I just did,
they hissed. Nico lowered his sword.
Just visited him?
The answer came to him suddenly,
and it was so obvious.
The time loop on the stairs, Nico said. None of that happened. That was you.
Well, duh, said the demon. I mean, your brain and your body probably thought it was real, but nope.
Nico glanced at Will, still passed out cold. If his boyfriend was trapped in a dream, then not great, but at least fixable. If Nico could figure out how. Maybe Will would wake up on his own if Nico could just keep the demon's attention away from him.
I'm impressed, Nico told them. I'm usually really good at knowing when I'm in a dream.
At this, the demon puffed up with pride.
Well, I do good work, they said. But sometimes it would be nice to get a little acknowledgement.
Nico had an idea. Slowly, he sheathed his sword and sat upright. This was the underworld. He had more weapons at his command than just a blade, if he could only gather enough strength.
You're right, he said. That's on me. You did a wonderful job. He had me believing everything.
To Nico's great shock, the demon appeared to blush, the dark skin on their face turning red. They waved a tentacle dismissively.
Ah, thank you. You have no idea how much it means to hear that.
So, could you tell me your name? Obviously, I need to correct this oversight in my research.
The demon's appendages fluttered behind them in what Nico could only interpret as a happy dance.
Well, my mother always wanted to go for the dramatics, so she decided on Ephialtes.
Ephialtes?
The demon frowned.
No, Ephialtes.
Ah, sorry, it's just, I once knew a giant by the name of Ephialtes. Terrible guy. Your name is so similar.
It's hardly similar, said Ephialtes,
back to being offended again.
There are two whole letters added to it.
My bad, I promise to get it correct.
Nico placed his right hand on the ground. He would need to be very delicate if he was going to pull this off without Ephialtes noticing. He dug his fingers into the dirt, carefully sending his consciousness downward, looking for bones.
So, earlier, you said we,
Nico continued, trying to split his attention. How many demons like you are there?
Ephialtes crossed their arms over their chest. Oh, let's see. To count just my own siblings would take more appendages than I have. But demons total?
Nico leaned forward.
Yes.
Ephialtes leaned forward, too.
If I had to hazard a guess, probably 10,000.
10,000. Indeed.
And you're all down here. What did you say, roaming the underworld?
Not all of us, they said. Every so often, a few of us get lucky and are sent topside to wreak havoc for a while. At least until one of you demigods sends us right back down. Then it's back to centuries of busy work, cataloging monsters, filling out performance reviews, waiting for our next chance.
sounds exhausting, Nico said, leaning back. He dug his left hand into the dirt, his mind searching the ground for. There! A nice cluster of dormant skeletons just waiting to be weaponized.
You have no idea, said Epiels. You demigods are always so sneaky.
Not always. Nico pushed downward with his power, willing those skeletons to rise. When two of Epiels' appendages shot forward and wrapped around Nico's wrists, they yanked him toward the demon, making him cry out in pain.
Yes, always,
the demon shrieked.
Did you believe you could fool me? You truly don't know me, Nico D'Angelo.
More tentacles wrapped around Nico, holding him fast against the demon. Their breath smelled like dry, rotted leather. Nico jerked back hard, but Epiels held him tight.
What do you want from me?
Nico screamed.
I just want you to sleep,
the demon said gently.
Don't you want that too?
Suddenly, Nico's eyes felt heavy.
No, he said. I don't want to go to sleep.
Nico?
Both Nico and Epiels turned their heads.
Will was sitting upright, his eyes wide.
What's going on? Who is this guy?
Excuse me, said Epiels, their body plumbing angry black smoke. I am not a guy.
Will gulped.
Oh, sorry.
Like, do you think that demon kind in all our glory would stick to the completely archaic notion of there being only two genders?
Not at all.
Nico shot Will a look that hopefully said, stay calm, though it might actually have said, help.
I mean, how boring would that be?
Epiel smiled.
You understand me, Nico. You might not know me, but you see me, don't you?
I promise it won't happen again, said Will, nodding. Just let my boyfriend go?
Oh, he's not going anywhere, said Epiels, and neither are you, demigod.
Will, still groggy from his slumber, was unable to dart out of the way before the demon's shadowy appendages shot out and held him in place too.
Will!
Nico cried out.
Leave him alone, Epiels.
You are both right where you are supposed to be,
the demon said giddily.
Oh, mother will be so proud. I am Epiels, the demon of nightmares, and you two will never wake up again.
As more appendages wrapped around both boys, smoke billowed from the demon's body, stinging Nico's eyes and filling his lungs. Nico thrashed in the demon's clutches. But it was no use.
Epiels blasted him with their powers, and Nico gave in to the darkness.
Chapter 12. Nico found himself at Camp Half-Blood. He stood outside the front door of the big house, hand raised, cheeks stinging from the cold. As his knuckles rapped the door, he realized which moment he was reliving. He knew what waited for him on the other side of that door. Another memory he very much preferred not to visit. But like in all his nightmares, he had no choice. He pushed his way inside. His gaze jumped anxiously from Kyren to Annabeth, from Selena Beauregard to Charles Beckendorf, from the Stoll brothers to Percy Jackson. All of them were gathered in the living room, staring glumly at the carpet or the fire crackling in the hearth. Nico didn't want to ask what was wrong. He already knew the answer. Still, the words spilled from his mouth.
Hey, where's my sister?
The air seemed to leave the room, just as it had on the actual day. The blood drained from Percy's face. He stood, putting out his palms, as if Nico were a feral cat he was trying to approach.
Hey, Nico. Listen to me, okay?
The memory was so raw, so agonizing, but Nico managed to regain control, wresting himself from the grip of the dream logic.
No,
he screamed. I am not reliving this nightmare again.
Chiron swiveled his wheelchair toward him.
You have to, young demigod, he said.
But his voice was wrong.
It now belonged to Epiel's. You can't escape this.
Nico sneered. He marched across the room, pushing aside Percy Jackson and loomed over Chiron.
You've been behind all the horrible dreams I've been having for months, then. Why do you keep telling me to listen? What does it have to do with Bob?
Chiron's face twisted in confusion,
and Epiel spoke through him again. For months. But
you can't manipulate me. Nico unsheathed his sword. This isn't real, and you can't hold me here forever.
Chiron, Epiel scratched their chin, apparently unfazed by the Stygian iron blade in their face.
Wait, can we go back to you claiming I've been sending you dreams for months? I certainly wish I had been. That would have been so fun. But no, Mother only required that I intercept you in Will Solace once you passed through the door of Orpheus. Also, who's Bob?
Nico's sword hand wavered. Around him, the images of his fellow demigods flickered like faulty light bulbs.
You know exactly who I'm talking about, he said,
though he couldn't muster much conviction.
Who is Mother?
Epiel smiled through Chiron's face. Oh, some questions you don't want answered, Nico D'Angelo.
Then the floor split, and Nico fell into the void. Will's eyes slithered open. It was dark, which didn't tell him much. All the underworld was dark. But as his vision adjusted to the shadows, he realized he was lying on a thin stretch of brickwork at the edge of a sewer trench. Jump the cow, said a voice to his right. That was your plan? Will turned his head, and there she was, Meg McCaffrey, her dark hair unkempt and her face sweaty, her rhinestone-studded cat-eye glasses sparkled in the gloom.
Meg, he said, how did you get here?
She scowled at him.
Same way as you, son boy. Your boyfriend helped us.
Will's heart dropped when he looked where Meg was pointing. Nico was curled up asleep in the tight space they were sharing. Will crawled over to him.
Nico!
He cupped his hands around his boyfriend's face.
Nico, are you okay?
He'll be fine, assuming you can heal him. Will looked up at a bedraggled teen boy with acne and ill-fitting clothes. Lester Papadopoulos, a.k.a. the ex-god formerly known as Apollo, a.k.a. Dad. But how was he back? Apollo had been returned to godhood at the end of the summer, and Will had expected that it would be years before he saw his father again, if ever. Will's head was full of a terrible fog, something thick and soupy that made it difficult to sort between the present and his memories. He had lived through this moment before, hadn't he? So why was he living it again? He vaguely remembering being in another place, a dark, smoky figure towering over him.
Help him.
A third voice broke through Will's thoughts. Rachel Elizabeth Dare was staring at him expectantly.
I thought you were a healer.
And I thought you were one of my children,
said Lester, crossing his arms. My children are supposed to be the best doctors.
What use are you?
Meg asked, her voice sharper than before, if you can't even fix your own boyfriend.
No, Will thought, this isn't right. There was a prophecy. His mind grasped for it. Was he supposed to leave something behind? But his companions were all staring at him, waiting for him to do his job.
Will dug in his pockets furiously. Where was his supply of Kit Kats? He pulled his pockets inside out. They were empty. When he looked down at Nico again, he seemed even paler than usual.
Nico, wake up, Will pleaded. You have to be okay.
Does he?
Jeered Rachel, her red hair falling over her face.
Come on, Will Solace, heal him.
Heal him,
Lester ordered, and it was the command of a god, not of a 17-year-old. The melody escaped Will's lips. He sang in Greek, caressing Nico's forehead, hoping beyond hope that color would return to his boyfriend's face.
"You're supposed to be good at this,"
Meg grumbled. Will's hands began to glow, dully at first, then brighter, until his body illuminated the sewer culvert. He pressed his fingers into Nico's cheeks, tears running down his face. But Nico wasn't responding. In fact, the color in Nico's whole body was disappearing, so he looked like he belonged in an old television show.
"I can do this," Will said, sobbing. "I can save you."
Nico's eyes opened, but they were milky white.
"No,"
he said, smiling coldly.
"You can't."
He grabbed Will's wrist. Will yelped in protest. His light began to drain away, flowing into Nico's body. As Nico's color returned, he sat up and pushed Will to the ground while the others looked on, approvingly.
"Finally, you're good for something," Lester said. "You make an excellent spare battery."
Will was unable to breathe, his life draining away, his colors vanishing until his fingers were as gray as ash. He tried to cry out, to plead with Nico, but he made no sound. Then Nico released his grip, and Will tumbled into darkness. As Nico fell, he could sense something waiting for him below in the darkness, much like he could sense the dead lurking beneath the soil. This time, instead of waiting to land in another dream, he lashed out, grabbing the presence with both hands, and was rewarded with a startled, piercing shriek. The dream world fractured. Nico opened his eyes and found his fingers clamped around Epiel's throat. Nico was free. Epiel's thrashed, two of their appendages flinging Nico across the ground. Nico rolled, avoiding another set of appendages that were trying to grab him. His hand found the scabbard of his sword, and he yanked it free, pointing the glowing blade at Epiel's. The demon roared.
"Why are you making this so difficult? Who doesn't want to sleep all the time?"
"Your mistake was thinking you could keep me down in my own home," Nico said with a sneer. Then he jammed his sword into the dirt. All around him, the dead rose, flesh and rotted clothes clinging to the skeletons, dim light glowing in the eye sockets of the cracked skulls, rusted swords clutched in bony fingers. But there were more than just humans here. This was the underworld, after all. A pack of skeletal wolves snarled at Epiel's. A dragon-like creature the size of a car flicked its vertebral tail, snapping its long jaws.
"I can summon as many of them as I need to," said Nico. "This won't go the way you want."
Epiel's laughed. A high, giddy sound.
"Nico, you're not thinking correctly."
The demon waved their right hand, and in an instant, every skeleton crumpled onto the ground, fast asleep.
"I'm the demon of nightmares, silly," said Epiel's, "and the dead can dream, just like everyone else."
They raised both their hands, and the ground cracked beneath Nico's feet. He scrambled backward as more of the dead clawed their way to the surface. Humans, beasts, monsters. But these hadn't been summoned by Nico, and they weren't skeletons. These beings flickered in and out of view, drifting over the ground like they were both there and not there.
"How could you even think to frighten or harm me?" Epiel's continued. "I bring darkness to the minds of others. I can summon anything, dead, living, real, imaginary, to torment you."
There was a terrible, terrible roar behind Nico, and when he spun around, he saw an impossible creature. A manticore, with the body of a lion, the tail of a scorpion, and the face of a man. But this wasn't just any manticore. This one had the short gray hair, the mismatched blue and brown eyes, and the hawkish face of Dr. Thorne, Nico's old vice principal from Westover Hall. Suddenly, Nico felt like a helpless little kid again. He backed away, unable to master his fear. Epiel's laughed, their mouth full of black teeth.
You can't defeat me, Nico D'Angelo. I am darkness. Yours, Will's, everyone's.
Their every appendage rose into the air, then whipped toward Nico and his lifted sword. Will rolled onto his stomach, his hands now free, and the stench of the underworld hit his nose. He nearly gagged, but there, just ahead of him, he saw the demon Epiels, surrounded by a host of terrible creatures. He saw the manticore, and knew exactly who it was from the stories Nico had told him.
He heard Epiels' warning. You can't defeat me. I am darkness. Yours, Will's, everyone's.
Epiels' horrible appendages rose and Will understood. Of course, Nico had not abandoned him at the River Styx, or drained the light out of him when Will tried to heal him. They were just nightmares. Epiels playing on his worst fears, just as they were now doing to Nico. And Will wasn't going to lie there and let anyone hurt his boyfriend. Will didn't think. He rose to his feet and shouted in defiance, and when he did so, his skin glowed brighter than ever before. Light erupted from his chest, slicing through the dark appendages that whipped at Nico. He watched in shock as they fell to the ground and flopped there. Epiels looked just as shocked as the manticore poofed out of existence. The demon of nightmare stared at their severed appendages, which wriggled like long, lanky eels out of water.
How? They said, staring at Will, eyes wide. Did you just...
Will? Nico pushed himself up on one elbow. What was that?
No, seriously, what was that?
Said Epiels, folding their remaining appendages protectively behind them.
Mother never told me about whatever that was.
It's light, said Will, breathing heavily, a line of sweat trickling down his left temple. You said you were darkness. Well, I'm the opposite. Epiels inched back, whimpering pitifully. Suddenly, they seemed more like a scolded child than a demon.
Mother is going to be so disappointed in me. She already thinks I'm not as powerful as I could be. Now you're probably going to defeat me, aren't you?
I kinda have to, Will said. We have a quest to complete, you know. The demon stomped a foot.
You demigods always have to ruin things, and no one appreciates what I offer the world.
For what it's worth, said Nico, struggling to his feet.
Your nightmares? They're really good.
Totally, said Will. I believe they were real until about 2 minutes ago. At that, Epiels perked up, their appendages fluttering. The ones Will had severed were already starting to regrow.
Really? You think so?
Nico nodded. Definitely high-grade material.
Well, shucks, said Epiels. No one has ever told me that.
And you're sure you weren't the one sending me nightmares before we entered the underworld?
Very sure, said Epiels. I would claim it in a heartbeat if it had been me.
Will frowned at his boyfriend, wondering what conversations he'd missed. But a different question rose to the surface of his thoughts. Who is your mother? He asked the demon.
Epiels merely smiled. You'll find out soon enough. Just go ahead and blast me with your light. Get it over with.
Will hesitated. It somehow seemed wrong to blast someone on request. But Epiels was a demon. They'd regenerate down in Tartarus anyway, starting the cycle all over again. They were a monster. Will was a demigod. That's how it worked, right?
Epiels must have sensed his reluctance. They raised their appendages and roared at Will, and just like that, it happened again.
Will's fear guided him.
Light burst from his chest, smacking Epiels in the face, and with a piercing scream,
the demon dissolved. Nico stared at him in disbelief.
Will.
Will drew a shaky breath. His eyes were swimming with exhaustion. He worried that he'd finally done something that would make Nico realize they were simply, irreconcilably, too different.
Yes.
Nico didn't seem able to talk at first. Then,
you are a legitimate demigod Care Bear.
Will's top lip trembled. He fell to his knees. Then he bent over in loud, raucous laughter until tears poured from his eyes.
You're so weird.
Nico crawled over, pulled Will to him, and silenced his laughter with a tender kiss. Please keep being my own personal Care Bear, though.
Always, said Will.
And then he promptly passed out. Chapter 13. Will's newfound heart-like power, which Nico still didn't understand, must have really drained him. Nico sat on the ground and rested Will's head on his thigh, absent-mindedly stroking his boyfriend's curly, blonde mane while Will slept. Nico wondered if the Care Bear anti-demon display meant that their main worry that Will's powers wouldn't work in the underworld was moot now. But what had made this one ability materialize at that particular moment? Fear? Desperation? Will snored softly, providing no answers. It struck Nico then how surreal all this was. In the distance, beyond the River Styx and the walls of Erebos, was his father's palace, usually a place where he would be welcomed. Now he'd have to avoid Hades at all costs on his way to Tartarus. Still, a part of him wanted to take Will into Erebos, teach him to play fetch with Cerberus. Will loved dogs. Then stroll into the throne room and introduce Will to his father, to show Hades that Nico was trying, that he hadn't forgotten Hades' wish that Nico be the one child of his who was happy. That was the most surreal thing of all. Was he happy? Nico wasn't very familiar with the sensation, but he couldn't deny that he felt wonderful in Will's presence. He even longed for the son of Apollo when they were apart. A funny thing had happened as the two grew closer. Nico suddenly understood all those cheesy, sappy love songs he'd always hated. It always seemed like such a ridiculous exaggeration. And it wasn't only that, of course. He'd grown up in a time and place where people like him, well, they just didn't have love songs. In a roundabout way, his experience in the Lotus Hotel had allowed him to end up here, where this was possible. Nico had a boyfriend. But that was the dichotomy of his life. The 70 years they'd spent at the Lotus Hotel had protected Bianca and Nico. But by then they'd already lost their mother due to Zeus's rage. So it wasn't like Hades' plans were infallible. They'd had to move all over the country. They found Camp Hathblood and friends. And then Nico experienced loss once again. Bianca taken from him. It was a constant pattern for Nico. Find some sort of solace and comfort, only to have it ripped away. Now, here was solace in his lap, sleeping like a baby. What would come and tear him away? Nico wanted to believe it would be different this time. He wanted Will to understand and accept the darkness that was a part of him. But he also wanted to be seen as a complex person who was more than that, not just a child of Hades. Still, how could Will understand if Nico couldn't understand it himself? He couldn't seem to escape the darkness any more than he could defeat Epiel's. It always came back, always claimed him, always reminded him of who he was. Was it possible for him to choose a different destiny? Or was he cursed to suffer every time he found a crumb of happiness? Nico reached out and grazed the scabbard of his Stygian iron sword. This was far from his first trip to the underworld, but he felt as nervous now as he did that first time long ago. He was thankful that Hades hadn't been the one trying to keep Nico and Will out of the underworld, at least. Nevertheless, something was coming for them. Someone down here didn't want Nico and Will to reach Bob. Someone called Mother. An inkling of an idea started to form in his head, but then Will stirred. His eyes darted around and found Nico. Hey, Will smiled. My grumpy little ball of darkness? Just like that, Nico's brooding sense of doom evaporated. It was ridiculous what Will could do to him with just a smile. "Don't move," he ordered. He dug around in Will's knapsack until he found the ambrosia squares Juniper had made them. As he fed one to Will, he silently conceded that they had been a good idea. The color soon came back into Will's face, and he was able to sit up.
"Well, that was an experience."
He wiped some crumbs from his chin, then gave Nico a guarded look. "Me okay?"
"I'm perfectly fine," said Nico.
"So, are we going to talk about it?" Will's face flushed red.
"Do we have to?
Demigod Care Bear?" Will reached into his knapsack, retrieved a metal canteen, and took a swig of water before handing it to Nico.
"You're not going to let me hear the end of that, are you?"
Nico had a drink, then gave the canteen back to Will. "Why would I? It perfectly describes the fact that light just erupted from your chest. Don't Care Bears shoot their energy from their stomachs?" Nico waved that off. "An unimportant detail. Have you been holding out on me? Did you know you could do that?"
"Not really," Will said. "But ever since I found out I could glow, I've been thinking that if my skin could emit light, maybe I could eventually project it outward."
"You sliced off some of Epiel's weird tentacle things."
"You're welcome,"
Nico laughed. "Well, at least we know your powers still work in the underworld."
"I'm still pretty tired, though," Will said, "so I shouldn't use it often."
"Will it still work once we reach Tartarus?" Nico wondered. He really hoped so. After helping Will to his feet, Nico guided him to the bluffs that overlooked the River Styx. Will froze there, seemingly transfixed by the rushing water below.
"Will?"
Nico asked, his hand on the small of Will's back. Will shook his head.
"In the nightmare that Epiel's gave me, you jumped in the river."
"What? There's no way I would do that."
"I should have realized it was a dream once you did," Will said. "You basically pressured me into doing it as well." "It was..."
He didn't finish. Nico grabbed his boyfriend's hand and guided him toward the edge of the cliff. As they approached the brink, Nico could sense his reluctance.
"We're not jumping," Nico assured him.
He brought Will closer and pointed down. "Look." Right at the very edge, a small recess was cut into the rock. The indentation continued downward, snaking along the side of the cliff, widening into a ledge no bigger than a goat path, only a few feet above the raging current. "We're taking that?" Will asked, his pitch rising with anxiety.
"We are," said Nico. "It's the safest way to stay out of my father's sight."
"Safest, huh?" "It's also the only way to get to the troglodyte's new home." Will took a moment to survey the world before him. He spent a long time staring at the black walls of Erebos, dotted with torches, and the crowds of smoky gray figures pushing toward the main gates.
"So many dead people."
Nico nodded.
"They have to go somewhere. Like I said, most will end up in Asphodel. They'll be bathed in the River Lethe, forget their mortal memories, and just wander around forever."
"And that doesn't disturb you?" asked Will.
"Not really," Nico said. "Most of them wandered through their lives anyway. It's what they chose."
Nico could tell that Will wanted to say something else, but whatever it was, he kept it to himself. Nico reached into his own pocket. He touched the bronze coin he always kept there, a keepsake Will had given him as a token of his dedication. He wondered if Will's commitment would always be that durable, or if he would eventually decide that Nico is just too alien coming from this realm. Nico shook off the thought. He led Will down the narrow, twisting path. If either of them made one wrong move, it was entirely possible they might slip and fall into. Actually, Nico didn't really want to think about that either. Thankfully, it wasn't nearly as long a descent as their initial one from the Door of Orpheus. But as they hiked along the river, Nico worried about what would happen when they reached the troglodytes. He was sure his subterranean friends could help them get into Tartarus. He was also certain that whatever plan they concocted, it wouldn't be a pleasant experience for Will. They were still in the upper reaches of the underworld, and they'd already been nearly bested by a shadow squid nightmare demon with mommy issues. Once they reached the depths of Tartarus, things would get so much worse. Well, they'd just have to deal with that when the time came. Nico stopped often to allow his boyfriend to catch up on the trail. The first time this happened, Will seemed convinced that something was following them again. Nico saw nothing. Plus, the trail was so narrow that nothing of significant size could have hidden from them.
"I swear I heard little rocks falling down," said Will, like something had accidentally knocked them over the edge.
This didn't seem likely to Nico, given that the roar of the stakes would drown out most other noises, but he decided to humor Will and remain still for a minute. They both heard nothing.
Nico shrugged. "We're both on edge after Epiels and their nightmares.
Don't let this place get to you."
"And you're sure we're not still in a nightmare?"
Nico inched closer and gave him a quick kiss. "That feel like a nightmare?" Will smiled.
"No."
"Correct answer. Now come on, just stick close and watch your step." They stopped a few more times, though, because Nico kept getting ahead of Will.
"You're so good at this,"
Will said, his steps careful and controlled, while Nico was now walking backward down the trail.
"How many times have you taken this trail before?"
"Oh, a few." Will's eyes brightened like he just had an epiphany.
"All those times I couldn't find you over the past couple of weeks, this is where you've been disappearing to?"
Nico nodded. "I wanted to make sure the troglodytes got settled in their new home. There were some challenges, but, well, you'll see what I came up with."
The corner of Will's mouth rose. "I'm glad you thought about helping them."
"Well, that's what this quest is all about, isn't it?" said Nico, facing forward. "We have to fix what's been broken."
"I love that about you, Nico D'Angelo."
Nico's face flushed. He wasn't sure he'd ever get used to Will being so open and nice, but he was definitely willing to try. The ledge continued downward, gradually leveling out until it was no more than a narrow path running along the water. The rocks slick with spray from the rapids. As they neared the end of the trail, Nico slowed.
"You're going to need one of those hoodies you brought," he told Will. "We're not going swimming, I promise, but you'll want to get as little of the river Styx on your skin as possible."
Will didn't argue. He slipped into a pale blue hoodie that read "Camp Half-Blood Counselor" across the chest. Nico pulled the hood on the collar of his leather jacket up over his head.
"Just follow my lead."
He moved ahead cautiously, hugging the cliff on his right, his face practically rubbing against the dark stone. And then, a reprieve. A wide cave mouth opened up in the side of the cliff, and Nico darted inside, away from the water. Will followed, the hood of his sweatshirt pulled very tight, so that all Nico could see was the tip of Will's nose and his eyes.
"That's a good look on you," he said.
Will pushed his hands out of the ends of his sleeves and shuddered.
"I feel like a turtle."
Nico unsheathed his sword. Its dim purple glow didn't do much to illuminate the cave, but Nico knew the way from here. "You ready, Will?" Will pushed back his hood and let his bushy blonde hair loose.
"Ready for what, exactly?"
Nico grinned.
"Troglodytes!" he called, his voice echoing deep into the cave. "It is Nico D'Angelo, son of Hades. I have returned with my glow-in-the-dark boyfriend, Will Solis."
Chapter 14. The answer came almost immediately. One moment, they heard the sound of shuffling feet from somewhere far away, and then suddenly, they were surrounded by troglodytes. There were too many to count, but Nico was so happy to see them. The troglodytes looked like humans if humans stood only a few feet high and had evolved from frogs. They had paper-thin lips over wide faces, recessed noses, and bulging eyes like amphibians. Their skin tones came in a seemingly limitless assortment of colors. Even in the dim light, Nico could see greens and blues and browns. One of the trogs, dressed very much like an aerobics instructor from the 80s, had skin that glittered as if covered in yellow gems. Troglodytes had a penchant for costumes, and they were dressed in every conceivable outfit you could imagine. Sweaters on top of overalls, double-breasted suit jackets over sweatpants, skirts and dresses and blouses, all haphazardly assembled and layered on top of one another. One trog wore nothing but neon pink, high-waisted leather pants, a jacket with cropped shoulders over pink mesh, and an audacious cowboy hat, all of it studded with gold. The hats were, well, if anything was expected of a trog, it was that they loved hats. Rarely had Nico seen a troglodyte wear only one at a time. Indeed, every trog in Nico's field of view had stacked multiple chapeaus on top of their head. Beanies under Stetsons, under newsboy caps, under snapbacks, under crowns. If it went on top of a head, the troglodytes wore it. The trog Nico knew best, Screech Bling, stepped forward, decked out as usual in his miniature George Washington costume, complete with a white wig under a leather tricorn.
"We see you, Nico D'Angelo and Will Solis," Screech Bling cried.
Of course, his actual speech was punctuated with the constant clicks, growls, and screeches the trogs used to communicate.
"Thank you, Grr, oh great Screech Bling, CEO of the Troglodytes," said Nico.
Will stepped forward.
"We come bearing quick gifts, oh great Troglodytes."
Nico watched in horror as Will unknowingly told the audience that he came bearing rotten gifts to the great fermenting troglodytes. Then his boyfriend set down his knapsack in front of a couple of jittery, nervous trogs and pulled out the other two hoodies he had packed. He held them high and asked, "Do these gifts hurt you?" The troglodytes looked uncertainly at Screech Bling.
"Will, what are you doing?"
Nico whispered.
"I thought I'd at least try,"
Will said.
"You just asked them if your hoodies devour them." "No, that's not what I said,"
Nico nodded.
"It totally is."
But the trogs seemed to have understood the gesture. Two of them had already slipped inside the pale blue hoodies, which dragged on the ground due to their short stature. Screech Bling doffed his triangular hat.
"They do devour us," he said. "Come, Nico and Will, scree, and join us in our new home."
Will smiled at Nico. "Guess I did okay." Nico chuckled. "Yeah, I think so." He took Will's hand in his.
"Thank you for trying."
They began their trek through the dark cavern with Screech Bling in the lead. Soon they entered a side passage lit by clusters of bioluminescent mushrooms, the trog version of wall sconces, and Nico could see well enough to put his glowing sword away. One of the trogs who had snatched a hoodie danced a little jig in front of Will, clicking and screeching before darting away. "I think that trog in particular is happy with you," said Nico. Will scanned the crowd, which was chattering and clicking fiercely in their colorful fashion ensembles. They've really improved their clothing options since we last saw them. "That was part of the appeal of this place," said Nico. "They're right by the River Styx." Wills tilted his head.
"I don't get it. The Styx carries the remains of broken dreams."
"Which means?" "Well, when the dead cross the river, they abandon their mortal lives. A lot of times, they discard the last of their precious memories in the water. You can see all sorts of debris floating in the current. The pages of unfinished manuscripts, paintings that went unsold, photographs of loved ones." Will winced.
"That is so sad."
Nico hadn't really thought of it that way. To him, it was just the nature of the underworld. But he nodded in sympathy. Anyway, a lot of clothing ends up there, too. The trogs have a great time fishing it all out.
"And Hades doesn't mind?"
Nico shook his head. "I doubt he's ever going to notice or care that there's less." Nico stopped himself. He'd almost said garbage. But Will would probably find that a harsh way to describe the remnants of people's lives. "Less stuff in the Styx. This is the perfect place for the troglodytes to be. No one is looking for secret caves on this side of the Styx, and no one from the world above is ever going to come down here willingly. So there's like zero chance that their home might, well, you know, accidentally get trampled by a bunch of Tory Sylvestris."
"Ugh," said Will.
I don't even eat beef anymore because it reminds me of them.
The tunnel twisted sharply to the left. Nico and Will fell silent as the light ahead of them grew, along with the echoes of what sounded like a boisterous party. Their trog escorts rushed forward, clicking and hissing excitedly, and the tunnel opened into a cavern even larger than the first.
Sweet Hades,
muttered Nico. He'd seen the earlier stages of the construction, but the sheer scope of what the trogs had accomplished since his last visit took Nico's breath away. If their previous home had been akin to a subway platform, this was Grand Central Station. The troglodytes had carved the cave ceiling into an elaborate dome, with friezes of trogs chasing giant lizards and bulls, then repurposed the largest stalagmites and stalactites into looming support columns, reinforced and decorated with all manner of garbage. To the right, the trogs had set up a massive staging area where they organized all the human objects they'd found into house-sized piles, though Nico couldn't see any rhyme or reason to the way things were sorted. Toward the back of the cave, an archway led into an even more bustling area, with trogs coming and going like rush hour traffic, more trogs than Nico had ever seen in one place. But even that wasn't the most overwhelming thing about Trog HQ. On the left side of the cavern, the trogs had excavated an enormous hole in the wall, about 50 feet off the ground, from which cascaded a midnight black waterfall. The water crashed into a gigantic pool before being channeled through a series of canals, where troglodytes sat on the banks with rudimentary fishing poles and nets, grabbing out all sorts of detritus and tossing it behind them to other trogs, who sorted the refuse and laid the best bits on racks to dry. Farther down, the current turned giant water wheels that seemed to be powering grindstones, bellows, and other strange contraptions.
What is this? Will muttered in awe.
You are bearing witness to a new age of the troglodyte, said Screech Bling. This is a most effective operation.
You diverted the River Styx? Said Nico, and he rubbed at his eyes.
For hydraulic power, and you've basically introduced the underworld's first recycling system.
Yes, we did, said Screech Bling.
It's so brilliant I can barely stand it, said Nico. Screech Bling puffed out his chest.
You have helped us greatly, Italian son of Hades.
Will frowned at the troglodyte trash pickers. But isn't Styx water dangerous? Screech Bling made a derisive clicking sound.
To trogs? No.
Another troglodyte ambled by with a larger goblet of smoking dark liquid, decorated with miniature paper umbrellas.
It is spicy, however.
He belched and continued onward with his Styx water mocktail. Screech Bling grinned at Will.
It is good to see you again, Texan son of Apollo. Please give your father our regards the next time you see him.
Thanks, said Will. I've got to admit your new headquarters are very impressive.
You have seen nothing, Screech Bling said, lifting his chin. Come, we shall feed you and hear stories of your quest.
Oh, I'm okay for food, said Will hastily. I just had some ambrosia.
You speak gibberish to the troglodytes, said Screech Bling. All beings must eat. Come, feast with us.
The trog leader pushed ahead through the crowds, not waiting to see if his guests were following. Will gave Nico a worried look.
The last time we ate trog food, it was lizard soup.
Which was not that bad, Nico said.
Honestly, live a little, Will. Let's get some food and rest before our journey really begins.
And if they're making their food with Styx water now,
I'll let them know we have dietary restrictions. It'll be fine. Besides, you need some nourishment after your Care Bear reveal. Will did not look convinced, but he followed Nico into the flow of trog foot traffic, trying to keep an eye on Screech Bling's tricorn hat in the distance. They passed numerous tunnels that branched off from the main thoroughfare, and Nico hoped they'd have a chance to explore. At the same time, a voice nagged in the back of his mind.
No, don't waste time. Go save Bob.
Finally, they arrived in the Trog's communal eating area.
A huge, recessed pit like an amphitheater, with a cooking fire and a collection of salvaged kitchen appliances in the center. Nico felt like he was about to be in the studio audience for a television bake-off. As they made their way to the front row, the Trog's master cook strode toward them. A huge grin on his face and a much-too-tall white chef's hat canted on his head like the Leaning Tower of Pisa. "Click wrong," pronounced the W. Looked overjoyed to see Nico and Will again. "I have improved our recipes," he exclaimed. "Today, I have a human dish for you."
"Oh."
Will looked like he wanted to ask whether that meant a dish made from humans, but he didn't. As Click Wrong scurried off to prepare, a small troglodyte dressed like a Tour de France cyclist ran up and offered Will a large yellowish triangle that kind of resembled a block of cheese.
"What is this for?"
Will asked. The child pointed at Will's head. He then offered Nico a brown bowler hat. Nico couldn't contain his amusement. He put on the bowler, then turned to Will.
"Where's your team spirit? You know the Trogs expect their guests to wear hats. Don't be shy."
With a look of irritation, Will placed the foam cheese wedge on his head.
"Why can't I ever get a normal hat?"
"Who likes normal?" Nico said. "I much prefer the weird."
"Says the guy with a normal hat."
Click Wrong returned with a steaming black stone cup in either hand.
"Please, provide feedback," he said. "I accept a rating between 1 and 5 stars.
Nico peered into the cup. The broth was a dark red color, with pieces of some sort of animal protein floating in it.
Looks great, though I should have mentioned we can't ingest Styx water."
Click Wrong waved aside the comment. "I am aware of human digestive weaknesses. Do not worry. Bone screech, appetite." Nico took a sip and was pleasantly surprised. It was a little tart, very savory, and actually quite good, though he couldn't identify what human recipe it was supposed to be.
"Not bad at all, Click Wrong," said Nico.
Will followed his cue and took a sip. He contemplated for a moment, then gave a thumbs up.
"Yeah, this is tasty. What is this?"
"Tomato soup," said the chef. "I am glad you enjoy it. This gives Click Wrong pride."
Nico stared into his bowl. Tomato soup would not have been his guess.
"Where do you get tomatoes down here?"
Click Wrong smiled coyly, as if this were a Trog state secret.
"It also contains green anole lizard and some noodles. Those are my contributions."
Will froze with the bowl halfway to his mouth.
"Lizard again?"
"A delicacy among Trogs," Nico reminded him so as not to offend their host. "Lots of human cultures eat lizard, too. We are honored, Click Wrong." To show he meant it, Nico slurped down a chunk of lizard meat. It was less chewy than he'd expected. Will took another sip from his cup.
"And what kind of noodles did you find?"
"The most common kind you humans use," said Click Wrong.
Will frowned, then pinched a long, dark noodle out of the broth. A look of horror grew on his face.
Would that be the kind of noodle we wear on our shoes?"
"Exactly," said Click Wrong, delighted. "They are quite tasty."
Nico covered his mouth to hold in the laughter. On the end of the noodle was a small sheath of plastic, an aglet. That only appeared on one thing in the human world. Will sighed.
"Well, thanks, Click Wrong. Humans can't actually eat shoelaces, but they add a real kick to the soup."
Click Wrong, clearly pleased, skipped off to serve other Trogs. Nico was lucky enough that his cup didn't have a single shoelace in it. He was about halfway through his soup and wondering how anoles could be so tasty. When Screech Bling reappeared, heartily chewing on a bootstrap.
"It is good to see you feasting with us."
"I'm glad you've made so much progress with the new headquarters," said Nico.
"There is more to do. Our hat storage room is already overflowing."
"Maybe you could collect fewer hats,"
Will suggested. Screech Bling stared at him.
"Or not,"
Will said, adjusting the block of cheese on his head. More hats for everyone.
Screech Bling turned back to Nico. Now, please, tell me of your journey. Nico updated the troglodyte on everything that had transpired so far, from the voices and the repeating prophecy to the fight they'd had with Epiels. By the end, Screech Bling was scratching nervously at his powdered wig.
We have only been here a few months, he said. Yet, we can sense something has changed in the ground beneath us. Something is stirring.
I don't like the sound of that, said Will.
What do you think it is? Asked Nico.
We do not know.
Screech Bling clicked his tongue a few times.
We lack wisdom of the underworld and its many strange creatures.
That's understandable, said Will.
But I do know this.
Screech Bling sniffed the air.
The change has a strong smell, and that scent is on you.
I'm sorry, what? Said Nico.
It is on both of you, said Screech Bling. A smell of... I do not know.
Will sniffed his blue hoodie.
Is it from our run-in with Epiels?
No, said the troglodyte. I know the scent of demons. This is similar, but stronger.
Related? It perplexes me.
The Trog CEO turned to the crowd in the dining area and shouted,
Trogs, come and smell these demigods!
Suddenly, Nico and Will were swarmed by other troglodytes pressing their noses against them.
Excuse me,
said Will, trying to push one away who was smelling his knees.
Yes, yes.
The troglodyte grinned up at him from beneath her sideways baseball cap.
The smell is all over you.
On you as well,
said another one, sniffing Nico's shoes.
Very strong, like fish rot.
No, like truffles, said another.
Bug goo, suggested a third.
It is the changey smell,
said a trog in a cowboy hat, and the others murmured their assent.
Yes, the changey smell.
Nico's skin crawled. Whatever the changey was, he didn't want to smell like it. A fierce chorus of clicks and growls broke out nearby, and Screech Bling excused himself to deal with a group of young troglodytes who were fighting over a set of matching wizard hats. As he walked away, Nico's thoughts began to race.
Epiels had mentioned
mother. Screech Bling said the smell might be related to demons. Nico's theory from before resurfaced, but he didn't want it to be true. It couldn't be.
Nico?
Will nudged him.
You okay?
Yeah, just thinking.
Nico must have been sending out strong, I don't want to talk about it vibes because Will didn't ask for details.
At least the troglodytes seem happy down here, he offered. I didn't expect that.
Nico raised an eyebrow.
Why not?
Will shrugged.
You know, just the underworld, land of the dead. I thought they might find living here depressing.
Death is a part of life, said Nico. We always live next door to it. I don't think that fact should be called depressing.
Okay, sure, but living in this place?
Will scanned the cavern like he was looking for something that just wasn't there. Nico took a deep breath. He reminded himself that Will had been through a lot today. They both had.
Not everything here is the worst in the universe, he said. My father lives in the underworld, and lots of living people keep his palace running.
Bob was a janitor there, remember?
Yeah, I remember, said Will. I'm just saying, living people like Bob or the troglodytes, they're the exception to the rule, right?
Nico scowled. He wished Will could be a little more open-minded about the underworld. The troglodytes may not have been born here, but they fit right in. Couldn't Will see that? But Nico didn't want to fight anymore. He also supposed their encounter with Epiels hadn't made for the best first impression of his father's realm. He was trying to figure out how to say that, how to spin his irritation into something more positive, when Screech Bling reappeared, having successfully mediated the wizard hat dilemma.
Now, Nico D'Angelo, said the CEO. Where were we?
Unfortunately, Nico remembered. The smell of change, of something stirring. Mother.
Epiels had warned they would meet her soon enough.
I know what is stirring, Nico said. Or at least I think I know.
Screech Bling examined him, his eyes moving quickly back and forth. Then his pinkish tongue flicked in and out of his mouth.
How would you know this, Nico D'Angelo?
Nico hesitated to say. He didn't even want to speak her name. But if the troglodytes could sense her smell, her presence even at this great distance, then they deserve to know. They all might be in danger. You should summon your council, Nico told the trog leader. We need to talk. Then he faced Will. I think I know who sent me those terrible dreams, and why Bob's in trouble.